Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. Today, our co-hosts are myself, Paul Wearson, and Dennis Hart, two old radio guys, and we are experienced with turntables and tape recorders, but we have Jackie Norman here, who is well acquainted with digital radio, on whom we depend to do the show. Thank you, Jackie, for engineering today. And Dennis, how are you?
I am good, Paul. This is the first time you and I have hosted this broadcast together, and it is a pleasure to sit alongside somebody even older than I am.
It's true. Cut my hand off and count the rings on my wrist. All right, Dennis has the news.
Well, Paul, a lot of this week's news coverage from the outlying newspapers around Ames has to do, of course, with RagBri, the Register's annual Great Bike Ride across Iowa. You are going to read numerous stories and see lots of pictures in your print editions about the event and its impact on your community or nearby communities. And we're going to have much more about RagBri coming up in just a few minutes live on this broadcast, so stick around. But the papers have other news as well this week. For example, the Boone News Republican reports on the retirement of Tom Schaefer, who has spent nearly 32 years at the Boone County Hospital in the area of physical therapy. Tom Schaefer grew up in Waterloo, then went to the University of Northern Iowa and to the graduate program of Children's Hospital School of Physical Therapy in Los Angeles. He returned to Waterloo to work at St. Francis Hospital there, then went to Boone in 1986. It's a long takeout about a man who has devoted much of his life to helping people right here in Iowa. The News Republican also reported that Mason Porter of Boone, who graduated from Ames High, received the high school's Alumni Association General Alumni Scholarship for $1,500. Mason will attend Iowa State University this fall with a double major in history and political science. The News Republican also had word that this past Saturday was Mo Kelly Day in Boone. Kelly is a 1953 graduate of Boone High who went on to work in radio and at the News Republican and at the Iowa High School Athletic Association. He also coached Little League and Babe Ruth teams for a quarter century and continues to this day with a blog about community life. And there was also word that this past Sunday was Backpack Giveaway Sunday in Boone. TCC Wireless and Wireless Zone stores joined forces all over the nation, including Boone, to donate backpacks filled with supplies such as pencils, paper, folders, and more to help students get ready for the start of the school year. And, of course, there are stories and pictures about the Boone County Fair, which wrapped up this year's run on Sunday. In the Nevada Journal, word that city officials have taken the wraps off a Nevada Community Business District Infrastructure Improvement Plan. About 50 people showed up for a public information meeting in the past week. They found out that 11 blocks in Nevada will be affected, 6th Street from I Avenue to M Avenue, and several cross streets. Now, under the plan, streets and sidewalks are going to be torn out, storm sewers and water mains are going to be replaced, and new connections for sewer and water service are going to be brought into each building. The city has set aside $9 million in capital improvement program money to pay for most of this, which is set to start in 2020 and last through 2021. The Journal also reports that the city of Nevada is going to allow a beer garden on 6th Street. The request for the garden came from a pizza parlor, which wants to set up a so-called outdoor service area on Saturday, August 25th, during Lincoln Highway Days. The pizza parlor is going to have to hire two Nevada public safety officers to be on patrol in the area during the time the beer garden is open. The Journal also reports that the Lincoln Way and 18th Street intersection widening project in Nevada is going to start August 13th. And the city council has approved giving the Nevada Nice Committee $400 to help refurbish the sign along Highway 30 on the turnoff into Nevada to 6th Street. The sign needs repainting and the new slogan, "Your Story Starts Here," put across the bottom. Also in the Journal, several stories and pictures, of course, about this year's Story County Youth Fair, which wraps up its annual run tonight, Wednesday, in Nevada. In the Story City Herald, word about how Roland Story's softball team came oh so close to winning a state championship last Friday. But the team lost 4-2 to top-seeded Davenport Assumption in the Class 3A title game. A heartbreaker indeed, but what a great season for Roland Story. Also in the Herald, word that National Carousel Day is today, Wednesday, and yes, the Story City Carousel taking part in the celebration. Numerous family events scheduled today. Might even go up there myself. In the Tri-County Times, joyous news. Yep. That the Collins-Maxwell softball team won the Class 1A state championship last week, defeating AGWSR of Ackley 1-0 in the title game. The Spartans won the title in their first season of existence, finishing the year with an amazing record of 30 wins and one loss. Congratulations to you. And there we have it, Paul, our summary of the week's news from the pages of the Boone News Republican, the Nevada Journal, the Story City Herald, and the Tri-County Times. Now, of course, the papers themselves are going to have more news when their print editions come out this week. And a reminder, Paul, I'm going to be right back here on Friday with a look at the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. And, boy, I don't think there's any secret that a lot of that's going to be about RAGBRAI.
I think you're right, Dennis. And what a rundown you gave us on all the surrounding communities.
I'm out of breath running that fast.
Everybody's wondering what they're going to do. Everything's a mess and folks are feeling blue. If your troubles got you can't abide, get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, 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 ride.
Hi, everybody. This is Lewis. I'm from the Spasmatics. I'm here with my partner, Gilbert. Last night, we had an amazing concert at RAGBRAI 2018. Oh, my gosh, what a jam. Oh, my gosh, it was amazing.
So crazy. There were so many people. And
I saw 6,000 people
at least
in town tonight.
On the wings of love.
That's very high. And we're hanging out at KHOY. And right now we're going to go over to the RAGBRAI campgrounds at Brookside Park. Right now.
I'm there.
We're going right now to the campgrounds. And we are going to get our party on.
Yes, we have Maggie and Ursula at the campground. Are we on?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you beautifully. What's the scene out there?
This is Ursula, and I'm at Brookside Park, where Maggie and I are hanging out by the coffee tent. Most people are already moving out. We have Ben here, who is from the Bay Area in California. But Ben, you're actually a native Iowan.
That's right. Living in San Francisco now, but was raised in Exira, Iowa, in southwest Iowa.
So how does Iowa look to you now that you're back?
Beautiful. Green is good instead of concrete. So, and it's great to see the sky. Yeah, Iowa's a great state.
This is a nostalgia trip back to Iowa?
It is a nostalgia trip. And, you know, even though 30% of the people on RAGBRAI are from Iowa currently, lots and lots of the people in that 70% are connected to Iowa in some way.
You enjoy talking to the people when you ride?
I do. It's all about talking to the people, seeing what they're riding.
Your favorite thing so far?
So far is Rollerblade Man.
Explain.
I'm not sure if he's doing the entire trip on rollerblades, but so far I've seen him out there every single day, you know, rolling the pavement. So I'd like to see him out there today.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and enjoy your ride today. You actually are doing something interesting while you're on the ride. Tell us what you're doing.
My name is Megan, I go to Mizzou, and I'm writing a 10-page research paper, and I'm doing it all this week while riding this entire ride.
But you don't ride and write at the same time.
Of course not. I just think about it.
Are you enjoying the ride?
Oh, I love it. This is actually my first time doing RAGBRAI. I've always wanted to do it, and I met Ben, and we're doing it together because we're both Iowa natives, and it's totally a lot of fun seeing how many people come out for this from around the country and, like, what they're into, and I love wearing my Mizzou gear, and people yell, M-I-Z, and I just yell, like, B-O-U, and it's, like, it's a blast. Yeah.
Your favorite part?
I think I like the little race car that's going down the road. There's some guy on, like, a recumbent bike that's, like, reclined inside of, like, a little race car, and he just flies down the hill, and I don't know how he does it, but it looks terrifying.
Well, you guys are trying to head out, right?
Yeah, we're trying to hit the pavement before it gets too hot.
Okay. Have a great ride. Welcome back to Iowa. Okay, this is Jason, and Jason is with a whole group of people, a large van, and a whole lot of people in blue T-shirts. And I'm going to give Jason the headphones so you can talk to him directly.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
Hi there. Yeah, we're with the Dream Team. We train with youth from the Des Moines area all summer long in the culmination to
prepare them for the long week of RAGBRAI.
Hey, so describe the ride. I mean, you've been on this thing for 3 days. What's it like hitting the pavement for 3 days doing 40, 50 miles a day?
Oh, you know, your muscles get a little sore, but other than that, there's plenty of company to distract you from all the aches and pains. So you just enjoy the ride, taking the sights, and especially the food for myself. So plenty to do out here.
Now tell me what the favorite food is so far.
Yeah, mine's Mr. Pork Chop. They grill it over corn cobs, which are really good. And they do something to make them real juicy, too. I don't know how they do it.
And you can tell that Paul and I have talked about the bike ride for years but never gone on it. Is there conversation that goes on between the bicyclists as you're putting on the miles on this thing?
Oh, absolutely. It's one big social ride. People are talking, exchanging stories, always finding out where people are from. Plenty of conversation to pass the miles.
I was on Main Street last night at the information booth, staffing the information booth on Main Street, and I talked to very few people from Iowa, but they were from all over the United States, every possible state. What have you found on your trip?
I'll actually hand you over to some of the youth that we're with. I've got Matt and Xander here, and they're going to tell you about some of the people they've met from other countries.
Okay.
My name's Xander. Last year, I met this guy named Sasha, and he's from Ukraine. And we exchanged phone numbers, and we stayed in touch. And I've seen him every day so far, this RAGBRAI. And he's just a really nice person. He's come to our camp before, and he's a really nice guy. Yeah.
Why does somebody from the Ukraine ride in RAGBRAI? How do they even know about it?
He doesn't know. He doesn't know. Did you have anything you want to say? How many miles have you ridden so far?
Like 1,000-something.
Training for it, 1,000 miles.
Wow.
Good. You're feeling in shape?
Yeah.
Anything in particular that you've enjoyed?
There's a slip and slide the first day. That was.
Where was the slip and slide?
He was like the second or third town.
All right. Well, listen, have a great ride. And John, tell us where you're from.
Well, I'm from Iowa City, but I live in Orlando, Florida now. I've always wanted to ride RAGBRAI. I've thought going through my town in Coralville when I was a kid, and I said, I want to do that someday, and never got the chance to do it, but now I make it a dream come true. So.
Do you remember Donald Cole?
No.
So tell us what you have enjoyed so far. Has it been living up to your expectations?
A lot of good food and drink out there along the way. And there's definitely a lot more hills here than in Florida. There's really flat there, so it's kind of hard to train. But, yeah.
Have a great ride. Thank you so much.
This is Maggie Westfold. I want to say hey to Jim Foley. He's my first cousin. He's from Florida. He was the individual who was hurt badly a couple of years ago in that accident in a campground. And he's doing well, and he says he'll be back.
Okay.
So, hey to Jim Foley.
Thank you, Maggie. We've got some folks here from Wisconsin.
Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. Brian Weeks.
Prairie du Sac. Paul, I'm going to hand the headphones over again to him so you can talk to him directly. I'm going to give you the mic here.
Okay.
Hey, how did you hear about RAGBRAI?
Back when I was a kid, RAGBRAI went by my house, and when I was lived near Henderson, Iowa. This was RAGBRAI probably 8, and then my dad asked me if I wanted to go on RAGBRAI someday, and I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
What's the highlight so far for you?
Oh, boy. You know, this is a week I look forward to just to take off and get away from everything. So the highlight is always, you know, just the routine. Get up in the morning, break camp, go find food, get through the day, set up camp, start it all over again.
How'd you like Brookside Park?
Brookside Park's fabulous. Last time I was here was my for my college graduation in 1983. So it's kind of the same. Actually, I didn't even recognize it, but it's actually probably one of the best stops because it's got a ton of shade. But no, the ride's wonderful. Tonight, got to shout out my son-in-law Carl is going to join us this evening to camp, and then my wife will join us for the ride on Friday and Saturday. So they're all first-time RAGBRAIers, and looking forward to having them along. It'd be like a first.
Late in the day, you might start feeling the pain. Is that right?
You know, I felt the pain when I stepped on a tent stake. But generally, we do a lot of cycling.
Yeah.
Do a lot of cycling, and then don't really feel a whole lot of pain. I mean, you get tired, but that's what you want to feel. You know, you don't want to be. You don't want this to be like a super easy thing.
What did you do last night? There was a big party on Main Street last night. Thousands of our closest friends were there. What did you do?
We went to Hickory Park Restaurant for dinner last night because when my parents came to town when I was in college, we used to go over to Hickory Park and have dinner, and we were there with probably 500 of our closest friends, and then and it was a nice stop. We actually took the the lift over there, and but we packed in a huge dinner and then slept on it.
Are you coming back next year?
Probably. I always say probably every year, and then they announce the route and they go. It's been a tradition. I'm here with my brother. My brother Dave's been on this ride over many years with us, and we just kind of enjoy the time together.
Well, hey, it sounds like a lot of fun out at Brookside Park. We've had Maggie Westfold and Ursula Rudenberg out there. Thank you, you two. You got out there right on time, and you got people on the mic.
We're going to sign off now because I know you've got a radio show to do, and these guys have a bike ride to do. So signing off from Brookside Park, where everything is really peaceful and serene. We've got people sitting at picnic tables eating breakfast. We've got the coffee truck. We've got a lot of people heading out already. Park is emptying out quickly. But a really beautiful scene here, and back to you, as they say.
Thank you, Maggie and Ursula.
Maggie and Ursula. Now, last night, Dennis, you were downtown at the information booth.
I was.
Talk about it.
Well, hundreds of people came up to us asking for such basics as, where should we eat tonight? Where can we get our bike repaired? Where can we go to the bathroom? We knew all of those answers. A lot of folks knew about the restaurant that, of course, that gentleman went to last night, Hickory Park. It's widely known around the Midwest, so a lot of folks who wanted barbecue went down there. But what interested me the most, besides this massive humanity last night on Main Street, is that it was peaceful. There were three stages out there with three performances going on, musical and otherwise. There were some Shakespearean things and some other things on one of the stages. But it was a giant party. The most people I had seen on Main Street, there were several thousand, maybe as many as 7,000 or 8,000 people there. And from the information booth experience that I had, most of them who came up to us were, of course, not from Iowa. They wouldn't have needed the information if they were from Iowa, but they were from everywhere in the country. And I always asked them, how did you find out about RAGBRAI? And many of them said, everybody knows about RAGBRAI. It's the most famous bike race in the United States. And that was so nice to see.
That's true, because other states, my brother lives in Georgia, and they have a bike ride across Georgia now. Everything is modeled after RAGBRAI.
Uh-huh.
And so Donald Call and John Karras were present at creation.
They were.
And, of course, he died last weekend. And I remember Donald said, the one thing I don't want on my tombstone is founder of RAGBRAI.
And the Des Moines Register did a great obituary of him on Tuesday, front page and a big jump page. And he had always said, the joke was that my first paragraph of my obit is going to be about RAGBRAI. They made a point of saying, now, Donald, note that it's not until the third paragraph about RAGBRAI. The first two were about his great column over all those years, the syndicated column, his Pulitzer Prize nominations. Donald Call, a great writer, and he's going to be missed.
Oh, yes, and it's a good time to memorialize him during RAGBRAI.
Yep.
He died right before RAGBRAI began. So.
On the same day, that's exactly right. So
that's good time. Donald was always good at timing. Now, we had one of our people out last night. It was Greta Anderson. She was wandering around, and we have a segment from her recorded last night.
At noon on Tuesday, over at Jack Trice Stadium, the first RAGBRAI cyclists were trickling in. They'd been invited to do a lap on the track inside the stadium. Outside in the parking lot was an area where numerous vendors had paid a fee to set up tents. At one tent, for instance, was a guy who owns several bike shops in Missouri along the Katy Trail. So he was selling biking gear, but also hawking information about that public bike trail. He pointed me toward an eye-catching mobile shop made out of corrugated steel. I talked to the owner-vendor, Derek Lewis, of Thelma's Handmade Ice Cream Sandwiches, a small business out of Des Moines.
We do two stops every day, one with Mr. Pork Chop and then one in one of the towns during the day.
What's Mr. Pork Chop?
He has a big pink bus that looks like a pig, and he cooks hundreds of pork chops over a corn cob grill every day for lunch.
Okay, but we're here to talk about your business, Thelma's. You've got cookies with ice cream in the middle. That sounds like a delicious treat for a summer day.
Yeah, and the riders really love it because it's a mobile treat. They can eat while they're holding their bike or riding their bike. But we make all the cookies from scratch, and then we fill them with Anderson Ericsson ice cream.
Anderson Ericsson, is that an Iowa brand?
Yeah, it's a dairy in Des Moines.
Cool. Literally.
Yes, and the reason we're here in Ames today is because Sukup Manufacturing is sponsoring the day in Ames, and they build grain bins, and we bought our grain bin components for our trailer from Sukup. And so we built this trailer kind of in the spirit of the Midwest out of grain bin material.
It seems like an event where there's a lot of cross-fertilization of businesses, nonprofits, towns, and communities.
Right. It's because there's people here from all over the world, and we want to give them a taste of what Iowa is. So some of that's university and the nonprofits and the food and all the kind of stuff that we can do that's really cool here.
How long have you been in business?
Since spring of 2012. We are expanding all over the place. So we're in grocery stores, kind of all the states that kind of touch Iowa. And then we're growing to new retailers all the time.
Buying an ice cream sandwich at Thelma's were two riders on a tandem bike, Lane of San Diego and Ryan of Bentonville, Arkansas. I asked them how they met.
Probably about 6 months ago, I was looking at doing RagBri with some other friends, and they backed out for a variety of reasons. And through a listserv of other folks who are blind, they mentioned Adaptive Sports Iowa, put me in touch with Mike. Mike introduced Lane and I through email, and the rest is kind of history. So,
Adaptive Sports Iowa cycling team is sponsored by the Iowa Farm Bureau and teams up physically impaired riders, whether they be blind or wheelchair bound or with a prosthesis of some kind, with able-bodied riders on tandem bikes.
It's been a good ride. And so far, like, you know, I was kind of nervous. I've ridden with other captains before. And so when I brought my bike up from Arkansas, I was like, well, let's see how this works. And within a mile, him and I were meshing, and we have been passed very few times. I think our top speed was, what, 48 miles an hour?
I believe so.
Whoa. Okay, so you have been meshing. Is that what you said?
We meshed, yeah. We meshed as in we got along. We clicked.
All right. And is there a part of that that goes in the bicycle and the actual riding of the bike? Are you?
Well, there's a timing chain over here that basically keeps us in sync. So basically if I'm pedaling, he has to pedal.
if I'm pedaling too fast, he's got to go too fast. If he goes too fast, I have to go too fast. So you've got to be in sync.
I see. That's okay. I've never ridden a tandem, so.
You want to give her a ride?
No.
Take you for a little spin around the parking lot.
I was going to say, these steering wheels, these handlebars don't work, so you just have to hang on.
Okay, I'll do it.
we didn't have to twist your arm.
Where was the cameraman? Well, you just have to imagine little old me scooting around on the tandem behind a tall, buff dude from San Diego. Are you really going to squeeze between that road barricade and the sidewalk with that other bike oncoming on the left? I asked. Yeah, he replied.
Yeah, you know, lots of my stokers that I ride with, I'm like, it's kind of a good thing that you're blind because you might not be happy with what I just, like, squeezed us through.
I think we'd be fine.
You use the word stoker. I just want, a stoker?
The person on the back of a tandem is called a stoker, and the person on the front of the tandem is called either a pilot or a captain.
Stoker is like you're filling the engine with coal or wood.
That's exactly it. We're the motor. Good call.
Okay, all right. Over at Ryman Gardens, excitement was high as the first riders had arrived. I met another pair from Adaptive Sports Iowa. The stoker, a female lawyer from Washington, D.C., with Joe Laszlo of Des Moines as her pilot. They'd been RagBri mates for 3 years. Incredible story. She's a blind triathlete, I'm guessing in her 50s, and both of them just grateful for their experience. Then I caught up with Beth Wissel-Crichel, events coordinator for Ryman Gardens. Beth, what does it feel like to be here now?
Oh, it feels great. We have a great setup. We have food vendors, and my private bartender is providing drinks for the RagBri riders and anybody who comes to visit Ryman Gardens today. And then we have also Vinyl Vagabonds, a very popular local band here.
This is right on the bike route. I mean, literally, the bikers just turn left at Mortensen. And here they are.
They're actually coming down Beach, and we're between Beach and Mortensen. And so we have people, we have some of our student staff up there flagging them down with butterfly stuff and butterfly nets and trying to encourage them to come in.
The butterflies, are they flying around or are they under the heat?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've never seen so many monarchs out in the gardens. We also have the butterfly wing, which has butterflies from all over the world. And Nathan Brockman and Anita Westfall, our entomologists, will be releasing monarchs this afternoon at 4 o'clock.
So the monarchs were bred here for this purpose?
Yes, we're a part of the monarch preservation.
Oh, that's beautiful. And it's a good year for monarchs, evidently.
Absolutely, yeah.
The band started up at 1 p.m., but there was really no one in the gardens to enjoy them. I returned to Ryman at 3 p.m., still practically no one. Some riders from the Midwest filled me in on why. I'm kind of surprised there's not more people here at Ryman Gardens.
Well, at the end of the ride, people want to get to their campsite, set up, and it just makes it difficult to stop for a couple minutes and see this beautiful place and the great music. You know, it was a 60-plus mile day today, and, you know, it's at the end of the day, and people want to set up their tent, get something to drink, settle down. This is a great place. This is awesome.
How long did it take you to ride 60 miles?
Well, we make lots of stops. So we left at 7. Was that what time? 7 o'clock? Yeah, we left at 7. So we spent an hour in Boone at a brewery and at a little deli. So, you know, we just take our time and enjoy the ride. It's not the riding, it's the stopping that's fun.
You two are from different places, but you're riding together. Is that normal? People just hook up in a bicycle kind of way?
Our group is from Harlan, Iowa.
Oh, okay.
And so we have connections from different people from Harlan. So, yeah, so
that's how it works.
That's how it works.
You're from?
Michigan.
Yeah.
Celine, just outside Ann Arbor.
Right.
And Annie's from?
Kansas City.
Missouri.
Okay. Well, at least we got a little breeze.
Oh, it's, you know, other than a little headwind, but that even then wasn't bad today, but... Yeah, this is not Ragbri. This week is not a typical Ragbri week, and last year was not a Ragbri week. I mean, it was cool last year. It's been cool this year. A little rain yesterday, but that was after everybody was in town. This is not Iowa.
You've done this before?
I have. Yeah, about I think around 12 times, maybe.
12.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you kind of plan your summer around it?
Well, it just works out that way. You always come back. It's like there's something
it's
that
addictive.
Brings you back.
It's addictive. My first time I did it, I said I'd never come back. And about 2 years after that, I came, you know, I came back, and it's been about 22 now. So, yeah, it's awesome.
My name is Sam George with NextGen Iowa. I'm the regional organizing director for Central Iowa. And we're out here with NextGen Iowa trying to register as many young people as possible, talking to Iowans from across the state, making sure that they are registered to vote, know about the elections, and that we can get them to go vote in November.
I'm Mara Keeley, and I'm the field organizer for Ames, Iowa. We're hoping to meet a lot of young people along the way, have a lot of great conversations, and essentially get as many young people registered to vote and excited to go to the polls in November as possible for the election.
We have a team of about 10 people out here registering voters and talking to as many people as possible, but it's been great so far. There's great energy. Ames is a great town. We're really excited to be here. And
you would be surprised. I mean, it's not even just young people. I registered someone last week, I think, who was in their 50s, and we convinced them to register, and they'd said, you know what, before this I've never felt represented, but I'm starting to understand that it's a big issue that our governor, our president, they're not representing us in issues we care about. I would say young people are extremely passionate about the price of our college tuition. If Governor Reynolds just increased the price for all of our 3 regent universities in the state, which has hit a lot of young people hard. Also, universal health care, women's reproductive rights.
We currently are in a bunch of different cities across the state right now, but specifically with Ragbri, we're going to Newton tomorrow. We're going to Sigourney the day after that, and then we're going to end up in Iowa City on Friday. Ames and Iowa City are the 2 biggest college towns in the state, so we want to make sure that a lot of people, even if they're not on Ragbri, that they're coming out for the big community festivities, that we can get them registered as well. We have a Facebook page. It's just NextGen Iowa, so if they search that, they can go to that page, like us on Facebook. They can see all the awesome things that we're doing in the cities that we're in. Like we said, we're super excited to be out here. Ragbri is such a great tradition, and we're happy to be a part of it, making sure that we elect representatives in November that actually represent us and care about the issues that young people care about.
On the east side, down at Mucky Duck, the British-style pub south of town, they were facing a similar situation. In the heat of the day, 2 p.m., favorite hometown band Reds Blues was playing to a gravel lot with a few faithful locals tucked under shade tents. Just a couple of writers were there, too. 2 high-ticket cover bands were to follow. Pub owner Marcus was a bit down in the dumps, and I was right there with him, as I'd left my SD card in my computer back home and couldn't even record a proper interview, and had to show up for my real job within the hour. 6 hours later, after my shift was over, it was another story. A good-sized crowd was enjoying the cool night air and reveling peacefully in the beautiful day they'd enjoyed, including this guy, Tom Sawyer, a quote-unquote integral part of Team Yo-Yo.
Team Yo-Yo stands for You're On Your Own. It's a joke, you know. But it's appropriate for our team because everyone, we meet in the morning, we say, hey, let's all go together, and then we go boop, and we're scattered to the four winds. So,
the band finishing up over at Mucky Duck was Rocky Raccoon, a five-piece Beatles cover band from Des Moines. I caught up with pub owner Marcus one more time.
All right, yeah, I'm feeling a lot more positive than I was when I last saw you.
That's right. That was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was hot. There were not many people here.
Yeah, and everything was going wrong. My generator failed, and yes, it was a little stressful for a while there. Things are better now. As soon as I see people dancing, I get very happy. It makes my day when I see people dancing, so that's good. Which we put an awful lot of effort into this. I put a lot of effort into this. It started off a little more slowly than I'd hoped, but...
You know, it was like that everywhere in town. I was over at Ryman Gardens. There's nobody there.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that's good to know, I guess, yeah. But now I see people sitting around enjoying the music. This is everything I hope for right now. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Did Mucky Duck make or lose money? Did Ryman Gardens spend more than they took in? Does it make a difference? They represented Ames. And in the end, that's what really matters.
And that was Greta Anderson with a wonderful piece about RAGBRAI last night. Well, RAGBRAI is a big deal here in Ames, and so is something else. Since Ames is a university town, it means we have a lot of rentals. A lot of people here are renting homes in this community. And there is such a thing called the rental gap that many of you may not have heard about, but our guests have right now. In fact, they're intimately involved in trying to fix it. Javier Miranda joining us here live in studio. Tim Kirchhoff on the telephone. Gentlemen, you are both members of the Ames Tenants Union. First of all, explain, what is the Ames Tenants Union?
My name is Javier Miranda. I am the co-chair of the Ames Tenants Union. And what we do is we work with tenants. We organize with tenants around our issues like security deposit theft or illegal lease provisions, and sometimes simpler things like helping people move in and out of their homes or just making sure that the city is hearing tenants' issues. We also educate tenants about what our rights are as renters, the rights that we have now, how we got those rights, and what rights that aren't yet protected by law.
What is a rental gap? Now that we've introduced you two, what's a rental gap?
The rental gap is the period between the end of one lease and the beginning of another. It can be a day. It can be a couple weeks. For some few people, it can even be up to a month. And during this period of time, the renter is actually homeless.
Is there an estimate of how many people this might affect any particular time of the year or that time of the year when the gap takes effect? In other words, how many students are we talking about here who are actually affected by this?
Tim Kirchhoff, Secretary of the Ames Tenant Union. At the moment, we don't have hard numbers on the total number of students or an estimate of the number of students impacted by this on a yearly basis. We've discussed ways within the union about how we could effectively estimate this, either talking and getting an estimate from students or rather getting estimates based on lease terms that landlords tend to use and going that route. But what we do have are stories from a variety of renters and names explaining their experiences about how their lease term has come to an end and they've struggled to find storage or temporary housing for themselves and for their belongings and their pet. And this creates a real financial burden for them, finding that interim housing and storage, as well as just a logistical issue. You know, they have to take potentially more time than it might be necessary normally off work to move between units, and it just creates a large stress on a number of students and renters in general.
Is this something that's unique to Ames, or does this take place in every college and university town in the country?
To the best of our understanding, this takes place in a lot of college towns and university towns as well. It's going on in Iowa City, and I'm actually from Iowa City myself. And over there, they call it Homeless Week.
Homeless Week.
Yeah.
Okay. Where do students go during Homeless Week? I mean, what are some of the anecdotal experiences you've heard about?
Yeah, talking to renters, I mean, it just depends. Some are able to stay with parents if they live nearby or other relatives nearby. Some folks are just couch surfing for a period of time, kind of going from, working with friends who will let them stay for a day or two. And other folks, you know, it even comes down to they might have to just, you know, sleep in their car for a night or two. So it really depends on everybody's individual scenario. Iowa State University also has, I believe, about 60 dorms more or less available for students or to use during this lease gap period. And so that is an option that's available. But if folks are ending up in their cars, then that's leading us to believe that this might not be adequate at the moment.
Here's the $64,000 question for both of you. What are you proposing to help fix this?
It looks like there's really two routes to solving the lease gap issue. The first is to use sort of available city housing options to shore up that gap, like the ISU program that Tim mentioned, where they're letting, I think they have 60 rooms available for $35 a night that people can use. I don't know about you, but $35 a night, I could make that work for one night, I think, you know, between July 31st, August 1st.
Yeah.
But if I had to do that for even two nights, that's a serious thing. So expanding that and using city or county funds to make that more accessible to a lot of people, that's one option that we've been hearing, and that's definitely a good route to take, and we think complementary with other routes. The other route is to enhance the power that tenants have to find a place to live during this period, whether that means that landlords lease continuously, whether that means there are different leasing duration options that there are more vacancies, because we know a lot of students leave in the summer. This is the story for every college town. So we're thinking, you know, if big landlords have a lease option that goes from, say, August to June instead of August all the way through July, then people could say, okay, I don't want to be responsible for a place I'm not living in for an extra month, so I'm going to pack my bags. And in the meantime, that allows people who are experiencing this lease gap to find a place to move into a little bit sooner. So a long-term goal of the Ames Tenants Union is tenant-owned housing. And this isn't the same as just like owning the house that you live in like my parents do or something. But this is, we're talking rental housing cooperatively owned by the people living in there. And we see this as a long-term affordable housing solution.
How would it work, though? How would you approach this? Let's say you have four tenants in a house, five, pick a number, it doesn't matter. How would they even begin to engage in ownership of that facility? Mm. How would that work?
These housing cooperatives are actually fairly common throughout the country. There's a couple in Iowa City that are prominent in that community, and there's tons and tons of them in the New York area, and some in, you know, the West Coast as well. But essentially, it turns the housing situation into a small community of its own where the people cooperatively engage in decision-making about the property. And, of course, the responsibility for maintaining and upkeeping the property and paying for it falls on the people who live there, which isn't really different from how it is now.
So we have about 35, 40 seconds left. Tim and Javier, what's your next step? Where are you going to go with this?
It looks like in the immediate future, students return to Iowa State. We're going to be looking to reach out to more tenants as they come back onto campus. You know, we really just kind of got completely organized and an executive council put together this summer. And so now we're looking to really expand and reach out to more tenants and grow in our organizing efforts.
Javier? Oh,
that's absolutely right. You know, Ames here is a town of about 63,000 people, and of that, 59% are renters. So there's a lot of people power here. There's a lot of questions that are not being asked of renters on a daily basis. And that's what we'd really like to do, is go out and have those conversations with renters and bring them in and get our voices heard.
Javier Miranda, thank you. Tim Kirchhoff, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we have just a quick break here and a live interview coming up on another important topic. So stay with us.
Love will ask you to stand, take you
Here we are for the next segment. We're going to have a special moment here because Jackie Norman is our trusty interlocutor. She is actually a gifted engineer. We're going to miss her because she goes back to full-time student activity.
We're trying to keep her here, but she just refuses to stay.
Maybe handcuffs are the solution.
Okay? Yes, yes.
Anyway, Jackie has a guest here today. It's a prof that she took a course from, and the subject is actually in contrast to what we've been talking about. We've had a pretty lighthearted show until now, and this is about human trafficking. So the interviewer is Jackie Norman.
Thank you for that introduction, Paul. Yeah, I decided to invite my professor in today. I've had her for a couple classes so far. This is Dr. Alyssa Storr. She is a professor in women's studies. She was actually the interim director of the Sloss House for part of last year, which was really interesting. And one of the class that I took with her last semester was human trafficking. And I thought it was a very important class, and I thought it was interesting that it's actually a course you can take. And I wanted to get out the word, and like, since human trafficking is such a big topic and we don't have the time to really go into it right now, I just wanted to talk with Alyssa about the class and her own personal activism that she's doing. So thanks for coming in, Alyssa.
Thank you very much.
So let's just start by talking about the class. Like, how did it get started?
Well, I've been doing public speaking and activism around the issue of human trafficking for quite some time. And I started teaching honor seminars at Iowa State around human trafficking. And once I finished writing my dissertation and defending it, I pretty much was full-time teaching. And so I saw that as an opportunity to see if I could add another class. So I talked to the director of our program, Dr. Ann Oberhauser, to say, hey, I have this topic. It's really important. My honor seminars are always filling up. Can we try this course? And she said, sure. So I tried it a couple of years ago during the spring semester, and it filled right away. We decided to go that route, and now it's offered every semester. I usually have about 25 to 30 students, mostly undergraduates, but a few graduates. And it really has opened up students' eyes to what human trafficking is. They all come to the class with different levels of knowledge. Being able to share not just information, not just about sex trafficking, but about labor trafficking, organ trafficking, child brides, things like that. So it's not just about sex, it's about all different types of labor trafficking and things like that.
And it's not just for women in gender studies majors either.
Right. Anybody can take it. I've had graduate students from sociology, which I also teach in that department. I've had students that are just interested in the topic and wanted to learn more about it. Students that I've had classes with before that I've been their professor and they want to take another class. So a wide variety of experience levels and of knowledge levels.
And then you also do some outside of the classroom work as well. You've done a couple seminars and stuff. Like, what do those entail?
Right. So I've done a lot of public speaking. I did a open forum at Torrent Brewery a couple of months ago. I have talked both on campus and off campus to different groups. And I also am on the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery, which is a state board that encompasses law enforcement, the judicial, people, activists, organizers, educators that are sharing information about what's happening across the state so we know who's doing what. And that's been really interesting, learning what's going on in Iowa since it is such a problem here in Iowa. And so I do a lot of, like I said, public speaking at conferences, conventions about human trafficking.
What have you noticed about human trafficking that's specific to Iowa since you kind of joined?
I see that there is not a lot of talk about labor trafficking in Iowa, which it is a problem. Labor trafficking can be found in a wide variety of arenas, whether it be construction, domestic work, nannies, things like that. But usually in Iowa, it's farming related or construction related. And then just talking about trafficking in general. A lot of students still think that it happened somewhere over there in another country, or it happens in the big city. Well, it does, but it also happens here. And usually students have heard about trafficking, but don't really know what it is, or all they know is about what they've seen on TV and the media, whether it be the movie Taken or whether it be, you know, some reality TV show or something. They're not quite sure what it is, but they've heard about it before.
And after, because I took the class myself,
right.
And you had a lot of guest speakers come in, which is really cool and stuff. Like, how much connections have you made since you started doing stuff like this?
Made quite a lot, actually. I have a lot of people come in. This semester I'm having Ambassador Luis C. DeBaca talk about labor trafficking, and he's very well known, obviously, at Iowa State because he's an alum, but he's very well known nationally, internationally. I've invited some survivors to come in from Arizona that we'll be Skyping with, because we can talk about trafficking all we want, but it's really important to hear from survivors, because I can talk about survivors that I've met or stories that I've heard, but to actually hear from survivors of trafficking I think is really important, so I'm working on that, but really have learned a lot about the resources here in Iowa and what I can offer my students in both expertise and also in other areas that I may know enough about, but I want my students to learn more. So that's why I bring in a wide variety of speakers.
So through starting the class and stuff, mm-hmm. What have you learned about this topic or in general about how to teach it from the class?
Right. It really has opened my eyes to how prevalent it is in certain areas that we wouldn't think it would be prevalent. You know, we talk about the Iowa Nice. We talk about, you know, well, it can happen in small towns. A lot of traffickers will start trafficking in small towns because everyone knows everybody. Everyone keeps to themselves, and so they're not going to say anything. And so they're under the radar, right? And it happens in big cities as well. It happens in Des Moines. It happens here in Ames. But what people don't understand is that it's anybody can be a trafficker, anybody can be trafficked. So there's not, you know, one way a trafficker looks or one way a victim survivor looks. And so I think that's what I've learned the most, is how to talk about that so people understand that you can't just sit on your porch and say, oh, that's a trafficker, that's a victim, right? Because there's not, they don't have, you know, a tattoo on their head, or they don't have a name tag saying, I'm a trafficker. And I don't mean to sound flip about it, but people are just like, well, it doesn't happen in my city. Well, it does. But traffickers are very, they know how to hide themselves, and they know how to look just like any other person. And so I think that's trying to overcome that hurdle and how to talk about survivors and how to talk about traffickers and look at those common indicators.
How have you overcome talking about it in your classroom?
I just tell it like it is. As you know, I'm very outspoken when it comes to the topic. I could talk about it all day long. Sometimes I go above and beyond, but only because I want my students to understand that it is a real issue, that it doesn't just happen to one certain person, that a trafficker is not one certain type of person, that it could happen to anybody. I mean, I'm educated, I have a PhD, but that doesn't mean that I couldn't be the victim of something, right? And so really helping my students be aware of their surroundings. I talk about this ad nauseum all the time about, you know, on vacation or studying abroad or on spring break, to be aware of your surroundings. And I'm not trying to scare my students so they don't do anything for the rest of their lives, but just to be aware of their surroundings. And if they see something, they need to say something. Because I tell them every single time, and I know you've heard this ad nauseum as well, law enforcement tell me they would rather someone call, and if they're seeing something wonky, they see something, they're like, I'm not quite sure about that, and to report it than to not report it and it be something.
Yeah, there's actually some posters starting to go up about it around here, because mm-hmm. I forget which gas station on Lincoln Way, but they have posters up now, too.
Casey's does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. About that, and I thought that was really interesting.
Right.
I had one more question for you. Because from taking the class, I know that you end it with a big paper where the students research a certain area that they want to learn more about.
Right.
And I was just curious if they research something and learn something that you didn't know yourself before.
I think so, too. I think one of the things that my a couple of my students reported on last semester was about pornography, the relationship between pornography and trafficking. And that can be a very controversial topic. And also the relationship between prostitution and trafficking and whether this issue of choice. And we could have a whole radio show about the issue of choice, and we may someday in the future. Who knows? But it really... seeing it from their perspective, you know, coming from, they may not know as much as I have gathered over the years, but for them to go in depth into a topic that they really want to learn more about is really fascinating for me, and it makes me more passionate about being an educator and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And so the papers, I have them pick a topic they really want to learn more about so they don't just think it's another paper to write, right? And it really has been very interesting to see sort of the knowledge levels increase over this semester in the form of this final paper.
That's great. Was there anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, one more thing that I wanted to say. If people, you know, there's a National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline that's answered 24/7. It's 1-888-373-7888. You can call that 24/7 if you are a victim, if you are a survivor, if you see something and you're not quite sure what it is. You can call that number 1-888-373-7888. And the people that answer the phone, like I said, they answer 24/7. They will dispatch law enforcement if necessary, things like that. So I think that's very important.
That's great. We'll be sure to put that on our website later,
yes,
too. All right, Paula and Dennis, why don't you wrap up the show? Thank you, Alyssa, for being on.
Well, very, very interesting. Good job, Jackie Norman. Her interview with Dr. Alyssa Storer, professor at Iowa State, on the subject of human trafficking. And you've been listening to Local Talk. We've been your hosts, Dennis Hart and Paul Wearson. Thank you for listening today. And a reminder that Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. right here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can also hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org. And you can find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
As always, our theme song is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard The Bicycle Song by David Rovix. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down. We'll train you. You can join the Local Talk team. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9.
And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is sponsored in part by Ames Electric Services, providing the option for any electric customer to support solar energy by investing in SunSmart Ames, a community solar farm. Learn more how you can make your energy greener at www.cityofames.org/solar.